discipline of questions and hopefully the discipline of some short answers. Yes, sir?
Mr. Humphrey, can you spell out, please, sir, any of the details of the intensive review of the peace effort which is being made?
I think the statement speaks for itself. I leave it just exactly at that point. It has been Secretary Rusk, of course, before the Committee on Foreign Relations, told that committee, which I have reiterated, that the American effort in Vietnam, both in terms of the military and the diplomatic, the effort to bring about a negotiated settlement is under review from A to Z, and I put it under an intensive review.
Sir, President Johnson asked you to run with him to Vice President again.
President Johnson and Vice President Humphrey seem to be working together quite well.
There's no saying, Mr. Vice President, that in unity there is strength. The Republican Party seemingly has that unity at the moment, especially in view of Governor Rockefeller's announcement yesterday. The Democratic Party does not seem to have it. How would you estimate the effect on the election of this divisiveness?
Well, the Republican Party, as a minority party, can always stand a larger dose of early unity than weekend. It sustains its life for the big battle that takes place in the general election. The Democratic Party has always indulged in the luxury of a certain amount of internal dissension and internal debate and, on occasion, conflict. But we have a unique quality which has stood us fairly well throughout our history. Being able to bind up at least enough of the wounds to come through in the general election. And it is my hope that we'll be able to do that. It is my hope that those who contest President Johnson's leadership now, contest him for the nomination, will remember that they are Democrats, will remember that their success politically has been within the home of the Democratic Party, and will remember that the Democratic Party has served this nation well. And if they remember that, I haven't any doubt as to the outcome of 1968.
This is your hope, but you can't say for sure.
Well, people who try to predict with certainty put themselves out of what I would call the human quality into the just a higher level, and I stay with the humans.
Mr. Vice President, do you feel that President Johnson should change his pre-convention strategy and become an active campaigner against Senator Kennedy and Senator McCarthy?
The president is the president of the United States. He's not a candidate. The greatest service that the president can do for this country is to serve as chief executive, to serve as president, to fulfill to the best of his great abilities the responsibilities of this high office. And that's exactly what I expect him to do. Some of the rest of us will have to undertake some of the campaign responsibilities. I have, over the years, as you know, tried to carry the message of our government and of our administration to the American people. I will continue to do so. I also have a number of responsibilities which I feel necessary to fulfill. Truthfully, the best politics is no politics. The best politics is public service, tending to your responsibilities, fulfilling them well, and giving the nation leadership. That's exactly what the president will do.
Mr. Vice President, you have compared the problem with the Democratic Party at the moment with the situation 20 years ago when Mr. Truman was a candidate and there was a split in the party. But is it really the same, sir? We didn't have the Vietnam issue at that time.
No, but we had an issue that was every bit as divisive. We had a bitter fight over American foreign policy. I was involved in it in Minnesota. My party in Minnesota came into being in 1946, the Democratic Farmer Labor Party. In 1944. It was literally destroyed in 1946 with the left-wing elements in the old Farmer Labor Party taking full command. And in 1948, we had a knockdown, drag-out convention battle at every precinct, ward, and county level and at the state convention. And it was over the issue of foreign policy, over the Truman Doctrine, over the policy of containment, over President Truman's firm stand against communist expansionism in Europe. Very much the same issue, just in a different part of the world. And we went on to gain a tremendous victory. I helped lead that fight. Orville Freeman was my partner, the President's Secretary of Agriculture. We went on to carry out that fight. And I think there's a great deal of similarity, not identical. History never repeats itself in all of its particulars, but there are some lessons to draw from it. And as you recall, in 1948, the opposition to President Truman was not content to fight merely within the party. They went on outside of the party and set up the Progressive Party. And by the way, the chairman of the Progressive Party was from Minnesota, the former governor, Elmer Benson. And one of the most popular figures in Minnesota was the candidate, Henry Wallace. And then you also had the Dixiecrat Party. You had Strom Thurmond. So you have today George Wallace with his political apparatus and operation that is essentially based upon the principles of segregation. You have today the so-called New Left. Some of it is operative within the Democratic Party. Some of it is operative outside of the Democratic Party. There is some similarity, not necessarily complete identity.
Does there seem to be more hope now for the president's surtax program?
I hope so. I think this is a vital necessity. I would say the most important issue before the Congress of the United States today is the issue of fiscal responsibility, which is based upon the necessity of the Congress passing a very modest tax increase, 1 cent out of each tax dollar. It'll do more to help this country in terms of its economy, to help pay for the bills that we are getting for our cities and for this war. That tax is to help pay for the cost of the war, to help pay for the cost of the rehabilitation of our cities, to curb the threat of inflation, to protect the value of the dollar, and to keep this economy moving forward. And for the Congress to delay in the passage of this tax is to threaten all of these great efforts.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Nixon claims that if elected president, he would end the war in Vietnam. What does he know, sir, that you people don't know, apparently?
We've been trying to find out. And let me put it right on the line. If anyone knows how to end that war with any degree of honor, without America running away from its responsibilities, without America withdrawing in defeat, if anyone knows how to end that war on honorable terms, he has a solemn, sacred, high obligation to present that information to this government.
Sure,
because this government is looking for every way that it can find to bring about an honorable peace in Vietnam.
Has the White House extended an invitation to Mr. Nixon so it could find out what he has in mind?
Mr. Nixon is always welcome at any level of government, except as an elected official.
Sir, Senator Clark's opposition in the primary in Pennsylvania. You heard Senator that. Clark is renominated?
These are matters that the State Committee takes care of. I'm out here to be of some help, I hope, to President Johnson and to the national administration.
Mr. Vice President, were you personally delighted by Rockefeller's pullout?
Well, quite candidly, I didn't have very many reactions one way or another. I thought that was a matter for the Republicans to settle. I have many friends in the Republican Party, and many social friends, but when it comes to election year, they seldom consult with me as to what they ought to do. In fact, they generally appreciate my keeping somewhat away from them. The decision Mr. Rockefeller made was his own decision, I'm sure, after very careful consultation within the ranks of his party. Whatever they do is their business. What we do, I think, will be the nation's business, because we really plan on going on to win this election.
Has his withdrawal helped Mr. Johnson's chances in November, sir?
I don't think it has harmed them.
Mr. Rockefeller also turned down the possibility of running for the office of vice president. What's wrong with that job?
Ask Mr. Rockefeller. I like it. In fact, I've made it quite clear from time to time that I've enjoyed the position, find it a position of responsibility and honor, and I hope that I'll be able to fulfill both of those requirements.
Will the plans for austerity cut into the programs for the ghetto?
Well, unless we can get our tax bill through, all of our programs will be threatened. It is imperative that we start to pay our bills. Now, the American people have had 3 tax reductions in the last 4 years. You cannot step up as we have your programs in education and in health and in urban redevelopment as much as 300%, and we have done so. We've tripled these programs in the last 4 years. without having, without paying the bill. Now, if you want to build a better America, if you want to fulfill, for example, some of the requirements of the recent report on civil disorders, a report that I consider to be constructive, forthright, and presenting a program that this nation needs very badly. If you want to do that, you've got to have the funds. You can't just go along on borrowed time and borrowed money. Now, we can afford these things. We have an economy of over $800 billion, the most prosperous economy that the world's ever known. That prosperity is threatened if we become reckless with our fiscal matters. And therefore, we're asking for a modest tax bill to give us some degree of fiscal responsibility.
There's been some talk, Mr. Vice President, of a possible summit meeting with the Soviet Union. Do you know anything about that?
No, I do not. And the success of those meetings are generally predicated upon the least amount of talk prior to them. Diplomacy is a delicate business. Successful diplomacy is even more delicate.
Where are we, sir, on the Pueblo?
Just where we were, an unsolved matter. But at least the emotion over it has cooled down somewhat. Fortunately, the efforts of our government to maintain a degree of calmness in the area, I think, has been fruitful. Our diplomacy still continues to seek the release of that crew and the return of that ship. We have yet to exhaust all of the diplomatic efforts, even up to the World Court itself.
We will get them back, though.
It is my hope, and it is our intention.
Mr. Vice President, you're going into Wisconsin today.
Yes, sir.
Can you tell us now what you think the president's strength is in numerical terms? What percentage of the vote will his delegates get?
Well, prophets are generally, as they say, without honor in their own country, and prophets in politics are entering a very precarious business. I make broad prophecies, but detailed prophecies, even on weather these days, have been hedged somewhat. You notice that the weatherman used to say it was either going to rain or it was going to be sunshiny. Now he says it's a 40% rain chance or 80%. He hedges. I hedge here a little bit, too. I've been in Wisconsin, as you know. I've had a bit of experience there. I think this is a very difficult fight for us. The Republican crossover, and my friend Senator McCarthy has asked for a Republican crossover, could very well have a very serious effect upon the administration's the Johnson ticket. It is not unusual for our Republican friends in Wisconsin, when they have an uncontested primary in their primary, to indulge themselves in a little political gamesmanship over in the Democratic precincts. This is an old habit that started a long time ago. And when a candidate asks for Republicans to cross over into the Democratic primary, you can rest assured that the invitation will be looked upon kindly. So I think we ought to clearly understand, number one, that there will be a Republican crossover, that Republican crossover will not be to the benefit of President Johnson. I think we ought to understand that that there is a very, very vocal and active group of opponents to the president in Wisconsin, so it's going to be a very hard fight. I can't predict its outcome, except we'll do the best that we can. At best, let me say, it's nip and tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
Thank you. Thank you very much.